Hey, John boy, how's the weather?
John Morosi.
JP can provide some clarity as to what went on. JP.
Bob, I will do my best.
Columnist for MLB.com.
Morosi. Where is Jeff Passan in all of this?
John Morosi.
Where is Jeff Passan?
Should we just call Jeff Passan right now?
Yes, just call him.
Fox Sports baseball contributor.
JP Morosi had it first. How you feeling, Padres fans?
MLB Network insider.
Lauren, it's amazing to see what the Brewers are doing, and you don't get to have the best record in baseball while having the ups and downs of any normal season without being able to manage crises. And not having Churio is a bit of a crisis. And yet, even for the next couple weeks, 2 to 4 weeks is probably going to be out. Look at the way they have played in his absence. The Brewers continue to keep it going. They're keeping a little bit of distance now between the Brewers and the Cubs. You're talking about right now the best team in the major leagues in the smallest market. We love when the Midwest is shining.
Yes, we do.
John Morosi.
I'm so happy. I can't lie to you. It's the best moment of my life. All the fans who are here supporting me means the world.
With Spiegel and Holmes.
Sources confirm that fun.
On 670 The Score.
We love when we get a chance to talk baseball with John Morosi. He joins us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. John, obviously, we love it when baseball's doing well in the Midwest, but
not up there.
But 90 miles north of Chicago, something special seems to be going on. I know we talked a little bit about it last week. Watching this run that the Brewers is on is amazing. What have people around the league said about it?
Well, Lawrence and Speaks, first of all, great to be with you. People around the league have had to get to know some new names. If they didn't know who Blake Perkins was already, or Isaac Collins, or Durbin, or others, and certainly some names that we've known on this team for a while, but you also then add Woodruff to this mix. It's a really, really good team. It's a good team with a blend of experience and youth. Yelich, I think, he's maybe not quite his MVP self of years ago, but he's healthy, which he was not healthy down the stretch last season. The pitching, I think, has really come up in a huge way. And they even have more depth on the pitching side than we thought. Chad Patrick, all of a sudden, was one of their more consistent starters. Then he was sent down to the minor leagues for a spell because they frankly didn't need him. They have that many quality arms. Devin Williams is a Yankee. He's struggling. And now McGill steps in. So I think it is a very athletic team. And that's how you can manage the absence of someone like Churio, and even Frelick has been out at different times of the year too. They do a great job of taking balls in play and making them outs on defense. They run the bases really well. They're getting enough power. And they also have, and I know this is hard to quantify, but we all see it, they've got that it factor of the chemistry of that group. I think partially the manager, but also partially it seems almost like a really talented college team in the way that they coexist with each other. And it's a lot of fun to watch. I know Cubs fans don't want to hear it, but it's a really nice brand of baseball.
Yeah, I mean, the entire organization seems like they've figured some stuff out. I mean, are they National League Tampa Bay? Are they now the new standard for what a small market can do in MLB?
They are, I think, to an extent. And certainly it does make you wonder, teams like the Pirates, those that have been lost for a while, you say, hey, why can't you do what Milwaukee is doing? Again, as you heard in the clip when I was talking to Lauren about it, with the exception of Sacramento, this is the smallest market in the major leagues, period. It is the smallest market. And look at what they're doing. So I do think, and there's no accident, as you know, Matt Arnold, now their president of baseball operations, is a former Rays executive. So they even have a little bit of that Rays vibe to them, and then that's by design. David Stearns, when he went there, I mean, David's a very smart executive. He hired somebody from Tampa Bay to almost bring in the Tampa school of thought, and Matt is still there. Of course, David is now running the Mets, and to great effect, I think, with the way that Matt has run things. They've drafted very well. And also this, and I know that we'll probably at some point in our conversation get into the conversation about the Cubs and what did or did not happen at the deadline. You need to be smart. And as many people, Cubs fans were saying, listen, you should trade Owen Casey, trade Kevin Alcantara. In many cases, that's fine advice. But where would the Brewers be if they had traded Jackson Churio or Frelick or Terang? course, they brought in Contreras when he was moved away from Atlanta, and they capitalized on another team's mistake. They were able to bring in someone like Collins from the outside at a very, very low cost. They're a really smart team that draft well. And by the way, some of the best money that you spend is on the talent that you already have in place. We just saw this week Roman Anthony signing long-term with the Red Sox. They've signed Churio long-term. They signed him before he even got to the big leagues. And when you sign the player that you already know well, it has, I think, a higher chance of working out than when you have to go invest heavily in free agency. And how many times have we seen those mega dollar deals not always work out? And for the Brewers, rightly or wrongly, a lot of those mega dollar deals and the potential of a massive nine-figure mistake just doesn't happen. They can't offer that type of money unless it's Yelich, who they already knew, Churio, who they already knew. And so they say no to a lot of investments that end up maybe being not the wisest, and they decide to allocate their money towards the players they already know well.
Six out of the last 7 years in the playoffs and didn't sell off a lot of prospects and deadline deals in those years, to JP's point.
John, who did you think did well at the deadline?
So that night, I said that I liked what the Yankees had done. I'm not so sure I like what they've done now that I've had a chance to see how it all looks. And by the way, that's why it's a hard job to be a GM. I got to own that statement. I said that night, okay, Bednar and Doval, and they added some bats previously. I said, okay, the Yankees, it's a little bit more of a quantity over quality approach, but at least they've done the work and brought in the players. And it hasn't exactly gone perfectly for the Yankees since. And I do tend to think that number 99 not being able to be in right field every day has had a lot to do with that too, in my defense. But I like what the Mariners did, like what the Padres did. The Mariners, look at the way they're playing right now, one of the best teams, and certainly they're playing the White Sox, and Chicago has seen up close why the Mariners have been so effective here this season, especially since they added Naylor and Suarez. They added some bullpen help as well. The Padres, and this is one of my favorite topics right now. I saw the Padres in person on Monday in Phoenix, and I talked to A.J. Preller at length, and he said some really interesting things. He talked about the reliance they have on scouting, how they still believe heavily in boots in the ballpark, as opposed to now you see a lot of teams scouting on video. AJ is big on in-person looks, okay? And he's gotten a lot of them. It's why he's confident in making moves for people like Mason Miller, and then the adjustments they made to their lineup with Laureano and O'Hearn and Felix Fermin. He loves what his scouts have to tell him. That's number one. And number two, he is thorough and will actually make trades. And we've heard this before, the new inefficiency, if you will, the new ability to sort of capitalize on the market is being willing to part with your prospects and be aggressive. And AJ said to me that the more deals you make, the easier it becomes to make deals, both because psychologically for yourself, you're not so resistant to that threshold of going over the line and making the deal. That's number one. But also importantly, teams know that you are not wasting their time. So many times in this industry, anecdotally, there's a lot of talk and a lot. I've got like a three-team trade happening and we're working on this, working on that. And then you get to deadline day. Do you want to do the deal? No, I can't do it. Ownership said no, or I can't give up this prospect, whatever it is. And again, I'm not speaking about one particular organization here. This is a broad statement I hear from a lot of different people. But with guys that are comfortable doing deals, and AJ is, Preller is one of them with the Padres, if you actually want to make a deal, you call the guy because you know that he'll make a trade. Whereas a lot of times it's, I can't quite do it. Worried about the fan reaction here. Can't give up this prospect there. And then it's a waste of time. And in those last days and hours before 6 p.m. Eastern on July 31, the thing you cannot do is waste time. And A.J. Preller is someone who is known for not wasting anybody's time. He will do a deal. And so when it came time, okay, we can move Fermin, we can move O'Hearn, we can move Laureano. They did it, and they've done nothing but win two series since the deadline. The Mariners have won two series since the deadline. Again, we have to look at things in the big scope of 5 years, and I just got done saying the Brewers were smart in not trading Churio when people were asking about him. So we have to understand the balance here. And by the way, the Brewers also got criticized a lot when they traded Josh Hader, and that season disintegrated soon after that. So they're not perfect either. But I do think that the teams that are willing to make a deal stand out, and the Padres are willing to make a deal.
John Morosi from the MLB Network here with us on the Spiegel and Holmes show. So AJ Preller's a madman, and that's fun, and he goes for it. Dave Dombrowski goes for it like crazy just about every year. He's always had very willing owners with deep pockets. He kind of chases them, which is very smart, around baseball, and it's fun. Jed Hoyer looked to be in a really aggressive spot and traded for Kyle Tucker, and then lots of aggressive moves in terms of the roster. Then all of a sudden, the deadline was kind of cautious. Do you think that his contract extension announced just before the deadline had any impact on the conversations that he and other teams might have had about Cubs prospects at the deadline?
That's a fair question. I believe the answer is no. And obviously, I wasn't privy to every single conversation to know exactly if the tenor changed. I tend to think that Jed was probably aware this was in the works long before the deadline itself arrived, to where there was probably an ongoing conversation, and he probably had a pretty good sense that his future on the north side was quite secure. The thing I'll say is this. He obviously was able to make some bullpen additions, and the lineup has been really solid to the point that I'm not really sure, especially with the way that Shaw was playing coming out of the break, there wasn't exactly clamoring for, we got to get Shaw out of here and we got to get in Eugenio Suarez or Ryan McMahon, who moved very quickly to the Yankees. So I want to give him a pass on the third base situation to an extent. The rotation, I'm a little surprised that they didn't wind up with like a Charlie Morton or a Merrill Kelly. And again, Soroka, it's easy to sort of poke holes in that acquisition because he pitches once and gets hurt. But the one thing I'll say, too, on his behalf about the rotation market in general, a lot of teams that needed rotation help did not get it. The Red Sox didn't really get it. They got Dustin May, but that was sort of like a tweener fit. The Dodgers didn't. The Tigers got Morton, so more of an incremental upgrade. The Yankees did not. So there were a lot of teams that were in that market, and it seemed to me that the rotation market was a little bit overpriced. All that being said, with all the conversations back and forth and how well he knows the guys in Arizona, it does surprise me that there wasn't a way to find, okay, would there be a fit for Alcantara? Maybe not Casey, but perhaps Alcantara for someone like a Gallen or, again, a Merrill Kelly before he was traded to Texas. Now, Texas gave up, I believe it was three of their top 15 prospects. So they had to give up a fairly significant price, but that's a price that I think the Cubs probably could have met while protecting a lot of their depth and not having to give up elite talent. So it's an interesting question. We'll never know exactly what the price ticker was. I do believe that as much as we talked about the potential of a Keller with Pittsburgh, I don't believe, based on what I can piece together, I don't believe that the Cubs were offering Casey for Keller one-to-one and that type of arrangement, even though I think that honestly that probably would have been a fair ask at that point in time. And with the Nationals, again, Soroka was the choice eventually, so clearly the Cubs and Nationals were talking. I don't think, however, that Casey would have been as great of a fit with the Nationals as he might have been with a team like the Pirates, because the Nationals already had a fairly robust group of outfielders. So I do share in some of the questioning about, okay, could we have been a little more aggressive for starting pitching? I get that. But I also think that the board of the options was not as favorable as we maybe thought, because not a lot of starting pitchers moved, especially not the controllable ones, didn't really move. And the second piece was teams that would have hypothetically been good fits, specifically the Nationals, they did not want outfielders. So that was not a good spot for Casey to go. The spot that I could have seen Casey going would have been Arizona, but again, they've got Corbin Carroll already. They've got Alec Thomas. So there's, and they have Gurriel still in place. So Casey was maybe not as perfect of a chip as we thought he was at the outset.
All right, one more thing on this, because you mentioned, you know, AJ Preller's description of, you gotta make sure that they call you back if they take you seriously. So could the timing of the extension have anything to do with how other counterparts and other teams were treating him, thinking he might have been a lame duck and basing returns on perceptions of his future in that way? Just find the extension a curious timing. That's why I asked.
Sure. No, you're right. I don't think, however, and this is also part of what I would say, broadly speaking, as Rick Hahn, who was on our panel at MLB Network for the trade deadline, which is great. I loved working shows with Rick. It was a lot of fun. He describes the current GM set of people in MLB as quarter zip nation, given the preferred wardrobe of choice that we see at the winter meetings. Quarter zip nation, in my experience, they know each other pretty well. And so I whatever was known publicly about Jed's extension, I would imagine as soon as he knew whenever things were moving in that direction, his colleagues in the profession probably also knew about it. So I don't think that his status had a tremendously determinative impact on the offers that he was here. I just don't think that it had a ton to do with it. It's there, it's an element. But he's also been in this industry for more than 20 years. He's a known commodity. And by the way, in terms of making deals, the Kyle Tucker deal required some guts, and that got done. And the PCA deal, it was a sell deal and not a buy deal at that point. That also took some chutzpah, and it worked out pretty well, too. So I think Jed has a fine reputation for getting a deal done. I just think that this year, the market dynamics, for whatever reason, were not conducive to him getting the major fish, and certainly that there could have been a double meeting there with the Marlins where Alcantara's name was mentioned a lot. Would have been a great fit. But the Marlins, by the way, are playing pretty good baseball right now too. So they weren't just going to give Sandy Alcantara away, nor were they going to give away Cabrera, because they're playing good baseball and they're trying to compete and earn some more fans in their marketplace as well.
John, we appreciate the time, man. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, guys. We'll catch up more in the White Sox next time around. They're playing a little better baseball, too. Maybe not against the Mariners, but the future is bright there on the South Side, too.
Well, we'll have that conversation next week, and maybe they'll stop their losing streak by then. Appreciate you, John.
All the best, guys. Thank you.